This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, I'm Michelle, and this is Jess. Welcome to Dogs of New Brighton, a podcast about the dogs in our neighbourhood and their humans. Just across the water from South Shore, Redcliffs is getting a new school. It's being built on top of the communal kitchen of an ancient village. Around 650 years ago, people lived there with their dogs. That's intriguing. I wondered whether any of those dogs would have roamed across New Brighton too. Tristan Wadsworth is an archaeologist and has been working on the new school site. He led me into the workroom at Underground Overground Archaeology, which was pretty cool, I have to say.
The dates that we have for this site are all sort of 1350, 1390, sort of late 14th century. So in terms of the people that came to New Zealand, they're sort of maybe the grandchildren of the very first people that came.
Okay, so Redcliffe's 1350 to 1390-ish period. What sorts of things are you finding? And in particular, you found evidence of dogs.
Yeah, so the early sites are all really brilliant, big, fairly permanent village sites, so we find everything there, basically, in terms of New Zealand archaeology. It's a real privilege to get to work on. You know, there's stone from all over the country being used for tools. There's, in terms of the species present, there's lots of moa, there's probably a bit of whalebone. We've got seal and other sea mammal, tons of forest birds, fish, shellfish, everything. And yeah, we found the kuri, which is the Polynesian dog that the people brought over. So prior to first settlement, the only mammals, terrestrial mammals, in New Zealand were a couple of species of bats. So the dog that we find on the site has obviously been brought over from Eastern Polynesia.
So we're sitting amongst a whole lot of cardboard boxes, all with quite, to my mind, obscure kind of numbering systems on them. But they all say Redcliffe's Flat, which is a clue. So somewhere in amongst all of these, there may be some what fragments of bone of kuri. How complete were the dog bones that you found?
Yeah, we found mostly fragments. We haven't found any whole animals at this specific site. And that's probably because, the preservation isn't necessarily too great for bone where we're digging, but also what we're finding is mostly refuse from food. The area we're digging is a big cooking area. So the kuri are obviously sort of being eaten, same as everything else, yeah. But we found lots of bits of jawbone and sort of the upper limb bones, vertebrae, all the bits and pieces, but no whole animals in one go.
So I live over in New Brighton, right? Just on the other side. Would those dogs have roamed? What is your best guess about that?
It does have to be a bit of a best guess at the moment, because New Brighton, the archaeology is not really well understood. I'd love to get a bit more work out there that we could find out more about it, but there's certainly a lot of evidence for occupation. There's a bunch of mins and stuff all up the coast, so those are food refuse sites, basically. There's a few recorded later settlements. Otoa Pairoa is one of the Ngāi Tahu settlements that was around the QE2 park, basically. Mm-hmm. Basically right underneath that somewhere.
But Ngāi Tahu arrived later than this period we're talking about here.
Yeah. And certainly there's only one good dated site, which is just a little collection of pipi in South Shore that gives us an idea. But that's 14th century as well. So certainly as soon as there were people anywhere in New Zealand, there were sort of people everywhere. And it's been my experience that every site that I've gone to, if you've got a good enough sample, you find kuriri in there. And so it's the people pretty much always had dogs with them. And you find that in all the ethnographic accounts and stuff as well from the first European settlers into the area.
And so the site that you are currently excavating, it appears that the dogs were being eaten.
Yeah.
Can the archaeology tell us anything else about what dogs were used for?
Yeah, and the ethnography as well, and Māori traditions and stuff all sort of tells us that that dogs were quite sort of broad spectrum in terms of their use. You know, they were companions. They're pretty much always found in settlements living with the people. They were used for hunting, certainly, especially for catching things like weka and ground birds. They were really useful for that. They have quite large jaws and sort of forequarters.
There's a photo of one, taxidermied one, from Te Papa. I'm actually going to put a link to a little video about it on our page. They're fugly, to be frank.
Well, I think I love that dog so much. It's at the current Te Taiao Gallery, and I got to see it recently. I took a photo with it because it's my favourite dog. But I think the taxidermist is responsible more than the dogs themselves.
Oh, no. that's an offence against all dogs.
They were sort of...
It looks like a hyena. I mean, it's got sticky out teeth. Yeah.
he's a bit feral. But if you imagine like a dingo, they're sort of kind of related to them... that's probably not far off, you know, sort of pointy ears, yellowish in colour, but they were also sort of white or brown or sort of spotted, collie-sized, little curly tail, quite handsome dogs. That one's, he's not great, but yeah, he's beautiful in his own way.
At least we know a reasonable amount about what the fur was like because of the cloaks.
Yeah, kahu kuri, the dogskin and dog fur cloaks were really prestigious, prized by Maori, And there's beautiful examples of those in some of the museums around the place. And beyond sort of eating them and using the fur for cloaks, the bone was a really useful resource as well. So we find a lot of fish hooks and things like that where you can tell they've been made of kuri dog jaw especially. There's like a curve to them that's really characteristic of the dog jaw. And the teeth as well we use for fish hook points. So the old people were really good at making use of whatever they had to hand, basically.
So just for anyone listening, that water noise is not all rain, even though it is hosing down outside. We're in the workspace, and you guys have got an intern, Tristan.
Yeah,
what's she doing?
Joe is washing some of the stuff from another site that we've got.
You're right. There's shelves and shelves of trays with bits of shell and stones and... all sorts of things that your mother would have made you throw out when you were a teenager.
Yeah. And we've got lots of Pākehā artifacts as well. The legislation covers everything from 1850 to 1900. Well, you know, 1850 being around the time the first Pākehā sort of showed up. So we've got tons of old broken bottles and bits of crockery and stuff that people's great-great-grandmothers did throw out and then we dug up later on.
So you pretty much always work with people's rubbish, right?
Yeah, that's the job. The whole sort of purpose of archaeology is to take that rubbish and find out what we can from it, and the stuff that's not written down in the history books, basically. Okay, here we go. It's the broken. You can see the top's missing. So we sort of call it, it's mostly the shaft, but it's the distal end of a left femur of a dog.
Yeah. Okay, it's a shame people can't see you actually doing that, because frankly that just looked like a piece of bone to me.
Yeah, it's you get a bit of experience handling them and figuring out what they are. And,
so it's a really dark colour. What is that caused by?
I think people tend to think of bone as being really white, yeah. But that's sort of a result of leaving it out and getting bleached in the sun. So, yeah, when bone sits in the ground for a long time, it tends to go brown.
And are there any marks on that bone that indicate whether it was cut or anything eaten?
Not that I can see, no.
But do you find that on bone?
Yeah, we do. And we often find as well a lot of bone with gnaw marks from dogs on them. So you get the little teeth marks where dogs obviously had a go at some fish bone or whatever that the people have just had lying around the village. And so even if you don't find dog bone, you often find that sort of indirect evidence of them eating other stuff around the place. And some of colleagues of mine from the University of Otago have done work recently on isotope of the teeth. So they look at the teeth and the chemical isotopes in those, and it sort of tells you about the diet. And so the diets of the dogs are very similar to the diets of the people, you know, a lot of fish and sort of marine stuff, and then a lot of veggies as well. So they're pretty much just getting the people's scraps from around the place. Yeah,
right, just a classic symbiotic relationship,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, absolutely.
What dogs and humans have done for millennia.
Yeah.
In fact.
Yeah. Pre-Purina, but yeah. the old way of doing it.
So with a lot of seafood and vegetables in their diets, they probably were quite healthy animals.
Yeah, yeah. They seem to have been quite well fed. There's certainly not really accounts that I've read of them being scrawny or anything like that. They all look pretty healthy. The bones seem like, you know, you can find evidence of malnutrition in bones and stuff like that, and I haven't heard any of that reported for Koori, certainly.
Right.
Yeah.
Then, just as I was getting excited about 650-year-old dogs in New Brighton, Tristan revealed it's not quite that straightforward. Yes, there were dogs, but there was probably no New Brighton.
The coastline's changed a lot in the last sort of 500 years. At the time the Redcliffs was occupied, there was just a big open bay. There was no sort of South Shore spit, and it just sort of went all the way up towards Pegasus and those areas. And then there was an earthquake around 1250, which brought the Waimak, which previously flowed out in Ellesmere. So the Waimak, sort of in its normal location, all the silt it's carrying out slowly catches that downwards current along the coast, and that forms the spit which closes off the estuary. And in fact, it closes it off completely. And then another earthquake around 500 years ago redirects that. So now the Heathcote and Avon rivers, instead of flowing out at Ellesmere, flow out to the coast, and they break through that barrier. So before they flow out there, that barrier sort of forms probably a lake very similar to Ellesmere. Like it becomes sort of probably a bit stagnant and so on. And then that change again smashes through the end of the barrier, so that we have the estuary as it is now.
Okay, so if I can summarise this. So we've got it about 1250-ish, maybe at roughly the time the first people are arriving in New Zealand. There would have been no South Shore spit at all, just a beach, just a bay.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been able to say, oh, this is New Brighton and that's Redcliffs. It would all be just a continuous thing. And then we get a period about the time of the people living at the old Redcliffe school site where we do have a South Shore, except that it joins all the way up to Redcliffe's kind of area.
Yeah, I think
is that right?
It's probably forming while they're there.
Oh, yeah.
The spit is slowly creeping towards them, and then they leave the site probably before it closes up entirely. One could speculate that that might be a reason they left. That's very speculative. There's a bunch of other reasons. But, yeah, then again, it broke through, forming the spit. And so even because that coastline is sort of prograding, South Shore wouldn't have been there, but New Brighton might not have been there either. It might have been underwater, and the coastline was another kilometre or so back, maybe.
Oh, kind of in Wainuni, yeah, yeah. Aranui sort of area.
Yeah. So, but as soon as that... So that coastline's sort of gradually gone out and out and out. We find that in Woodend, where the sites that we find that date from that sort of 13th century, like the earliest sites we find, are about 3 kilometres back, and they're like on an old beach ridge. So in terms of your New Brighton dogs, they might have been more like seals. and then it took a few hundred years for New Brighton to actually form into the nice sandy place that it is today. And then there would have been dogs straight away, basically.
Isn't that fascinating, though, that I can't help it. I always assume that things have been the way they are, yeah, to some extent, and they're not. As an archaeologist, do you, when you talk to non-archaeologists, do you find yourself constantly going, but?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, especially, like, particularly with environmental stuff, there's even in a country as young as New Zealand, the past is really dynamic. You know, people think of the rolling Canterbury plains and all the nice grasslands and stuff like that, but before that it was swamp and forest, and it looked completely different. Yeah, so yeah, I love that stuff.
Thanks, Tristan. The link to a Te Papa video featuring the unfortunately taxidermied kauri is on our Facebook page. That's Dogs of New Brighton. You can post comments there or email us at dogsofnewbrighton@gmail.com. We'll be back in a fortnight. We're on Plains FM, Tuesdays 12:30, repeated Sundays 12:30, and online anytime. Just go to the programs link at plainsfm.org.nz. So that's all from us. See you on the beach.